from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez hanging out with you all over the world on wildmichiganradio.com. Updated the website. There it is. It's updated almost completely, but we're still working on it. Also, we've updated our podcasts. They are all fully there up until this show. So you can download the podcast via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And it's all being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. For everything firearms, lots and lots of ammunition, open carry stuff, everyday carry stuff, all kinds of accessories, optics. They've got it all, man. Check them out. Also being brought to you by our friends at the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, March 4th and 5th, Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort. They have their big convention. I'm going to be up there for that Friday and Saturday evening. Looking forward to seeing you there as well. Details again at the website. And thanks to our friends at Conquest Sense. And we'll be talking with Doug Roberts on behalf of the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. So it's going to be a very busy show today. Got lots of great stuff. Going to kick it off with my friend Greg Woodland right now. Greg is an avid collector of things sportsmen and outdoors related, and he's kind of been my distant mentor, if you will, because my whole life I've been buying and selling, picking, and I love it dearly. And when you break these things down into like Brewiana, which is beer stuff, there's railroad stuff, tobacco stuff, gas, Petroliana, the gas and oil stuff is through the roof right now. Sportsman's Collectibles, the vintage stuff is really catching up. Greg, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Duran. How's my friend Duran?
I'm doing well, man. And I don't want to say catching up, but really is keeping pace with all this stuff because, look, it's let's just say it, if you want to collect vintage sportsman's collectibles, fishing lures, whatever, I say focus. Focus on the one thing you love, man, because there is a lot to learn out there.
That's great advice, and I think that's where so many guys get in trouble. They collect it all and never really put a collection together. They just have a whole lot of different items, and that's okay unless you truly want to be collector of something specific and, in essence, become an expert at it.
You know, I mean, even when it comes down to fishing lures, if you want to just collect Michigan-made fishing lures, that can get you into a whole lot of trouble by itself.
Yes, it can. Michigan was such an incredible state 100 years ago, for that matter. It was the mecca, if you will, of lure manufacturers, and that's individuals, and that's certainly companies like Shakespeare, Hedden, Pawpaw, and then you had all the little garage guys that were making them as well. So, as you said, it can get away from you just on lures alone.
You know, I bought a speaking of Greg Woodland here, I bought a group of lures on eBay a number of years ago. One of them turned out to be an alger lure. Now, my friend Terry McBurney, who is Mr. Fishing Lure, I told him about it one time, and I thought he was going to faint. He says, you realize that is like one of the holy grails of fishing lures. I'm like, well, I realized that when I flipped it back for sale.
Yes, exactly. But when you bought it, which the seller probably didn't know what they had, you didn't know what you were buying, and it turned out to be, as you said, a holy grail.
It was a good thing because at that time, this was like the early mid to late 90s, I paid like $15 for the whole group. And I put that one back on. I got $100.50 for that one lure by itself, which now I can only imagine with today's market.
It would be north of $500 probably.
Oh, Lord.
you know, depending on condition, which is also always critical to any collection, condition drives the price, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So how did you get involved in this? Because as long as I've known you, you've been very heavily into it.
Well, it's a funny story. I grew up in Leslie, which Not everyone knows where Leslie is, just 30 miles south of Lansing. But having lived there my whole life, there was a old hardware store downtown Leslie that after I came out of college, they were having a garage sale. They had sold the building. The bank next door was buying it. I went down there, and there was what ended up being a tremendous amount of gun and fish advertising for sale. This stuff was from the late 1800s, early 1900s. I didn't know what it was. I just knew I was in love with it. And I ended up buying just a ton of it out of there. And that started to become what was my collection.
Wow. Okay. As a buyer, a dealer, collector myself, wow.
It was truly a treasure trove. And I didn't know at the time, but it ended up being about 30 pieces of these die cuts and calendars from Winchester, Peters, Remington, Daisy BB gun. And it just had been left up in the attic for, been there since, like I said, the late 1800s, early 1900s.
You know, Greg, I think the one thing that has attracted me to antiques and collectibles, things of that nature, is the ephemera, the stuff that's just really not meant to last, the advertising like that, the cutouts, the calendars, the paper goods. It's just so much went into the lithographic work and the art behind it that it's truly timeless.
It absolutely is. And what I've always said, Duran, is the companies back in those days, I compare them to the companies today, the technology companies, where they inundate you on TV and turn you into a customer. That's what happened 100 years ago, and this was cutting edge stuff that when you first walked into that old hardware store, that gun shop, the first thing you saw was a gentleman, a cardboard die cut with a hunter dressed in full hunting gear, holding a double barrel shotgun and holding a box of Winchester shells or Peters shells, something like that. And it grabbed you. And mentally you said, I can't leave this place today without a new box of shells or a new shotgun. And that was cutting edge advertising at its finest. But so much of it, because it was paper, cardboard, once the season was over, it was taken out, burnt, and destroyed. And so obviously that's why it's collectible with what's still out there today.
It is, you know, I mean, we can go to you know, any big box store, Meijer, and look at a box of Remington shells, and there's a mourning dove on it, which really to us doesn't translate because
right. We
don't get to hunt mourning doves in Michigan. Still a sore spot with me, but hey, I digress.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that we'll probably talk about today is the Michigan hunting and fishing licenses that is also very collectible. But I believe it was 1985 when Michigan tried to push through a mourning dove hunting season. They had it all set up. They issued licenses for one day, and the Michigan Audubon Society got their teeth into it and shut it down. So those people were contacted, told to get back with the Department of Natural Resources, turn their license in, and a few of them did not do that. And so those today are very, very collectible.
You know, and I want to speak of Greg Woodland here in Wild Michigan. Greg, I want to touch on something real quick. You bring up the button licenses of the 20s and 30s. Very collectible, very beautiful, small, about an inch and a half round button, somewhere of that nature. That your little paper license would be tucked in the back. And, you know, there's a lot of the resident small game and deer, but the truly difficult ones to find are the non-resident buttons.
Correct. Just supply and demand. Again, Michigan being probably one of the most premier states to hunt at that time, along with New York, Pennsylvania, those two were extremely popular as well, as was Wisconsin back then. Indiana and Ohio did not have deer hunting seasons back then. But in the late 20s, for example, the state of Michigan would issue somewhere around 500,000 resident licenses.
Wow.
They would issue 400 or 500 non-resident. So
okay.
That gives you the scope of why they're so collectible. There's so few of them that existed.
All right. Greg Woodland is our guest. We're going to talk more with him next here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, buck knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street 127 in Mason, for all your firearm needs. They've got classes there as well, CPL classes, home defense classes, and they've been doing some predator workshops there as well, and a great bunch of guys over there at Not Just Guns. Speaking again with Greg Woodland, he's got a show coming up we'll talk about here in just a couple of seconds, outdoor hunting and fishing collectibles show that it's going to be great to get back out into public, into these shows again. But Greg, we talked briefly about some of the fishing lures, just touched on those. But another big one here in Michigan, and believe me, I am scouring everywhere looking for any kind of bear archery item. That is one of the most iconic things to collectors in the state.
You're absolutely right. And that particular part of the collecting arena for sporting collectibles is growing in leaps and bounds right now. Just a ton of interest. And I think, again, because the younger generation can in many ways relate to it, they're certainly hunting with compounds and crossbows, but they're starting to see what took place back in the 40s and 50s when it was really new. And Fred Bear and Bear Archery just produced some incredible stuff. And guys are chasing it in leaps and bounds right now.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to find some very cool things at very reasonable prices. But it's getting harder and harder. I mean, as we speak, I can tell there's guys screaming at the radio going, "Shut up! Quit talking about it."
Exactly. Please don't promote that. But again, they produce fantastic bows, and there's guys that just collect bows and bows only. And then, of course, with that come quivers and arrows and broadheads, anything else that bear archery in itself, and particularly Fred, were just incredible marketers. Mm-hmm. Fred, he had his factory up in Grayling, but where Fred shined was he would open a new shop because the sport was relatively new. He would be opening one in Alpena, or they would be, and he would be there Saturday morning shooting bows with the customers that were trying them out, teaching them, you know, which arrows they should be using, which broadheads. I mean, he was just a fantastic marketer, and that was a premier company back in those days for the state of Michigan.
Absolutely. You know, my friend Tom Nelson tells stories of Fred walking into Anderson Archery, and it was always, "Oh, here's Fred. Hey, Fred, how are you?" You know, I mean, he was just a regular guy doing his thing. You know, he never thought he was anything special, but here he is, the godfather of modern archery in our country. I mean, traditional then, which was modern.
Exactly. Yeah, Fred truly put archery on the map, and there were a couple other guys, but I don't think anyone possessed the people skills that Fred did. And if you get up into the Grayling area, everybody up there that's still around and knew Fred, he was at the coffee shop every morning when, you know, prior to going into work, and it was just a normal guy having breakfast and catching up with everybody else as to what was going on in their life. So truly a remarkable businessman.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And the equipment, a lot of it has stood the test of time. I mean, you can still go out, find yourself an old Bear Kodiak or even one of the lesser bows and still shoot it today because they hold up.
Absolutely. More and more people gravitating back to that way of hunting today versus the crossbow, which does not possess, you know, it just doesn't take nearly the skill.
Right.
So when you harvested a deer back in those days, you earned it. That was for sure.
Absolutely. Greg Woodland is our guest here. Coming up, Greg, you've got a show that takes place down in Jackson, and it's been kind of because of the pandemic, it was on hold. And this is truly one of my favorite things to do. I mean, even if I'm going just to look, this is my hands-on education for my business outside of radio. This is where I'm talking to the experts, learning from them what they collect. And I'm going to throw Destry Hoford out there because that guy is such a wealth of information. He is a patch collector. I mean, he can tell you thread count on some of these old patches.
Yes, he
these
can.
Old patches.
That is his line of expertise.
I mean, just seriously.
And yes, and always willing to share his information, which is what I love about the collecting world for the most part is, you can't know it all. And when you bump into people like Destry who are more than willing, what's your question, Duran? And I'll answer it for you. And he does. And he's just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, I've learned that because I had some patches from the Lincoln Bowman that I had picked up. And I mean, he instant messages me right away. He goes, I want one right now, you know, because I don't have that one. And it was produced by this company and this limited run. I'm like, dude, my head's going to explode. Just stop.
Yes. Well, thank you for the plug on the show. We're excited to get it up and running again this year after a 2-year absence, just due to COVID. And we're sold out. We've got 95 tables of various vendors, if you will, everything from lures to patches to Fred Bear archery, lots of hunting, fishing licenses, the buttons, and quite a few duck decoy, Experian decoy type people. So it'll be a broad range of items. We try to focus on Michigan-made items from years gone by, but not limited to that because there were other states that produced a lot of great items as well, and we welcome those to be brought in and sold.
Now, what are the dates and where is it going to be exactly?
Okay, it's just a one-day show, Saturday morning, April 2nd. It's at the Eagles Hall in Jackson, which is on 301 South Detroit Street. And it is open to the public 9 to 2. We do not do any early buyers. And the dealers come in and set up from 7 to 9. So they're busy setting up for 2 hours and very little shopping going on then. So it'll be intense, but should be a great day.
Yeah, it is, man. And be prepared for all of the coolness that is there. And, you know, you bring up decoys. That is something that I really try and steer away from because pike spearing decoys and duck decoys financially can get you in trouble, especially if you don't know what you're buying. But there are some out there from premier makers, and I have not spent the time learning who is who and what their intricacies are.
Yeah. And again, Michigan was a mecca for that. Probably the premier duck decoy company in its time in the 20s, 30s was the Mason Decoy Company out of Detroit. They mass produced them. I think true duck hunters will tell you they didn't perform well in water, but they were the most beautiful looking decoys ever made. A quick story on that, they patented a unique paint process that was second to none, and that's why they're still collectible today, because that paint held up over the putting them in the water, shooting over them. They ended up hooking up with the Ford Motor Company and selling their paint process to them, and found out that there was more money in the paint business than there was in the decoy business. So there were other great decoy makers, Ben Schmidt, his brother Frank, and then of course down in the St. Clair River area, there were just tons of individual makers.
All right, we'll have to check them out. Greg Woodland, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you in Jackson in April with Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time in a state.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Scents out of Davison, Michigan, makers of VS1, Evercalm, and lots of other great scents in a stick, plus all their other accessories, find them online via our website, wildmichiganradio.com, which I'm happy to be saying is been updated after its dramatic, change. It's nice to see some fresh stuff on there. We've got links to all the events coming up, like the we got the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, their big convention coming up March 4th and 5th at the Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort. And we figured, you know what, let's grab somebody from there, the president of United Deer Farmers of Michigan, if I am correct in titling this person, but y'all know him as the Deer Professor, Doug Roberts. How you doing, buddy?
Well, currently that's correct. So,
so you've gone from professor to El Presidente in like a matter of a couple of weeks here on the show.
Well, yeah, on your show, but been president for the last few years. So it's enjoyable. We have a wonderful, wonderful board, wonderful group of people to work with. So it's been a lot of fun.
Let's clear up some mysteries and some misnomers right now, because if it's things I don't like, it's inaccuracy is one of my biggest pet peeves. What exactly are the United Deer Farmers of Michigan? I know that you have 200 to 300 deer at your facility at any given time. You produce typical trophy whitetails, but let's talk about, there are some very non-typicals, some beautiful, freakish non-typicals, and I mean that in a very kind way, being produced around the state too. But what is this organization? Because I want to get it out in the open right now, exactly what you guys do.
Sure. United Deer Farmers of Michigan is a nonprofit organization that represents all of the cervid farmers, the deer, the elk. We follow the reindeer, even some of the exotics like sika, fallow deer. All of those licensed facilities in the state of Michigan is what we represent, and we try to work with and take care of either problems or promote the industry in a positive way. So that's what this association is about. The convention that you're talking about coming up on March 4th and 5th at Soaring Eagle Casino is our big fundraiser and membership meeting. It's a two-day event, starts at 3 o'clock on Friday, goes all into the evening, and then again all day on Saturday. So it's a wonderful time, a lot of fun things, but that's what the association is about.
You know, the deer farmers, I mean, look, there are deer farmers out there producing trophy whitetails for hunting facilities across the country in the state of Michigan. And one will come along that will give everybody a bad rap, okay? And people get all bent about high fence hunting or whatever the case. When, look, you know firsthand from working at Paradise Hunt Club that you have 1,100 acres. Look, it's not a fish in a barrel shoot.
Well, Duran, it isn't, and again, we, the industry itself, have been part of the problem, because we are learning what the hunters and the hunting industry would like to see, feel comfortable with, even the general public. Farming white-tailed deer seems abnormal, and yet, ironically, deer have been farmed for many, many, actually hundreds of years, other countries. The DNR actually started the deer farming business in Michigan because the deer numbers were so low in the wild, they asked farmers to actually start raising them and reproducing them and letting them go into the wild. And that's how we got our deer herd in Michigan back. And a number of states did it that way. Well, once these farmers really started enjoying raising white-tailed deer, they didn't want to give them all back, and so hence deer farming was created in the state of Michigan. We have a very unique state. Our industry is very well-balanced for the number of hunting ranches that we have compared to the number of farms that we have. We're able to supply the right number of hunt bucks, as we call it, and the breeding programs and the breeding farms, and it's a good balance of what is taken out each year and what is supplied new the following year. And so the industry is very balanced and it's very strong and doing very well in the state of Michigan.
I appreciate that, because there is, like I said, there's a lot of misinformation out there You know, and look, I understand that some people just don't like animals being raised to be hunted or, you know, or killed. I mean, it all depends on how you want to look at it, whatever the case. But, you know, and I'm trying to be sympathetic and to everyone, but at the same time, you almost can't be.
Right. It's not for everybody. I mean, even hunting, if you look at hunting, some you have diehard bow hunters and you have diehard gun hunters. Within those realms, you have diehard recurve, you have diehard vertical bows, you have diehard crossbows. Everybody, that's what makes hunting and the hunting community so special and so unique, is that everyone has found and can find their favorite way of hunting and their favorite places to hunt. And simply deer ranches, hunting ranches, give another option and another opportunity. But it doesn't mean that everyone has to do it or everyone has to agree or abide by it. I will say each year that our industry keeps growing. The number of people that use our facilities are realizing that they are well-balanced deer herds to the habitat. It is a true hunt, just like you would find in the wild, other than when you do see stuff, normally it's bigger, antlered, larger bodied, because they're well taken care of. So,
and they are, too. I mean, look, let's be honest. There is a lot of money poured into the health of this internal herd that you guys keep fenced, but at the same time, you guys are pouring money into research for CWD that benefits all of us.
Yep. Well, yeah, and really, United Deer Farmers of Michigan, this convention coming up on March 4th and 5th at Soaring Eagle, the three main places that our money goes to is CWD research, positive legislative workings with the legislator and the government. In other words, when we put in CWD certification testing for all of our herds, when we put in TB accreditation programs for all of our herds, so we know that our herds are disease-free and we can monitor that on a yearly and three-year basis, we are following higher standards than a lot of the other agricultural and other states are doing. And so this fundraiser really supports CWD research. We are literally trying to stop it. We're trying to wipe it out. We're just not trying to slow it down. We're trying to fix the problem, get rid of the disease, and we really believe we can. And so a tremendous amount of money goes into that.
You know, speaking with Doug Roberts here, speaking on behalf of the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, Doug, it seems to me that's rather, it's a big thing for you guys to step up with your own cash and put the research into this and not just let the state do it on their own. You know what I mean? I mean, it's quite admirable.
Well, it needs to be done. Listen, what people have to understand is the DNR has a job to do, and that is to manage all of the wildlife, all of the forestry, all of the water, everything in the state of Michigan. They have a huge, huge, tremendous job. And part of that is trying to manage CWD and TB, which we also have in the state of Michigan. But managing it is different than trying to eradicate it. We're trying to eradicate it from an agricultural standpoint. Can we find ways of eliminating or killing off or stopping CWD? That's overwhelming when you look at it to the DNR standpoint when they're managing. That's why they say we're trying to slow the spread, because it's not their expertise to eliminate diseases. That's the Department of Ag. And so we work with both of those agencies and trying to stop these problems.
All right. More with Doug Roberts coming up next on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, very happy to have you here. Make sure you get caught up on all the podcasts. Check out our website. You can reach the podcast via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can follow us there on Facebook and all of the other things that we bring you each and every week. And, of course, it's all being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street, 127 Mason. And we're speaking right now, Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense, who just happens to be the president of the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. And that is what we're focusing on today. Doug, it's you have taken the path of raising the typical trophy whitetail. I mean, beautiful, monster whitetail, but in the typical fashion. And then there are others that have gone the non-typical, the crazy kickers everywhere route, and that's cool too. But it seems either way, there's a lot of work that goes into farming and the genetics of these things.
Well, exactly, Duran. You know, whether it's typical looking or non-typical looking, and what's interesting, there's hunters for all types, and both types, I should say, from the extremes to the squeaky cleans. But all of it takes a tremendous amount of genetic research, genetic combinations. The feed and the maintenance of these herds is tremendous. The testing for diseases to make sure that we have clean, free herds. You know, we now have worming program. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, like my farm alone will have, you know, $70,000-$80,000 feed bill just for 1 year. That's just feed. That doesn't include anything else or of the maintenance of it. But again, it's our job to take care of these animals to the very best of our ability. And thankfully, we have wonderful people in our industry that think the same way. And so United Deer Farmers of Michigan, our members have made it a very strong association as it has moved forward. And I've been in it 30 years now. And I know the association has changed names, but it's been around for 28 years. Mm-hmm. So pretty amazing to see, and I'm pretty proud of it.
You know, it's funny. What people don't realize, you know, look, in the cattle industry, there is a lot of money in selling the genetics, the semen straws of certain, you know, 3,000-pound monster Angus bull. And it's no different in the whitetail community, because when I attended a convention here a couple of years ago, there was the same thing. I'm like, what? I never even thought of that.
Yeah, it's really amazing what we've done. The white-tailed deer, we have DNA genetics now that we can go back to, you know, numerous years back, and we can show you the parentage and the great-grandparentage and so on and so on. But we're also now finding out markers within them that we can test for susceptibility, for example, to CWD. Are they more resistant to it, or are they more susceptible? So if we breed more resistance into our herds, the chance of our animals getting CWD becomes less and less and less. But again, that all goes through genetics. And so it's really, we compare ourselves kind of like to the racehorse industry, where you really have these fine-tuned animals and the genetics that follow through them. Our whitetails a lot of times are the same way.
Man, it's just, look, for people listening and they see a high fence and the first thing they do is, oh, you know what I mean? It happens. Trust me. I'm fascinated because I just want to see something. You know what I mean? I want to see somebody's hard work walk by me, which a lot of times is not the case. But, you know, but this is why, you know, we always want to get to the people who this is their livelihood. This is what they do, because if we don't, we don't know. If we don't ask, you'd never know.
Exactly. You know, and that's kind of that's what part of the convention is about. I mean, this convention is open to the public. When you come and register and you show up, yes, it's a $50 fee and includes both days, all your meals. But there's games and prizes. We have balloon raffles. We have a mystery gun safe. We have a 50 and out. We have a live auction on Saturday. We have two live auctions Friday night with we call it a minute to win it. You better get in a bid, because it's going to be auctioned off within a minute. But then we also have a hunt auction, and that'll range from fishing trips to turkey trips to antelope hunts. So there's a number of things that will happen at this convention that, yes, we're trying to raise money to work on CWD research and to work on legislative stuff that makes things better for everyone in the state of Michigan. We work with Farm Bureau, the Department of Ag, the Department of Natural Resources. So that takes money to work and create those type of bonds and working relationships. So, again, if you want to have a good time and really understand what the deer industry is about, this is the convention you want to come to at Soaring Eagle.
Yeah, it's definitely, it truly is a show-and-tell type of convention with a lot of interaction. The people are going to be there. I'm going to be there. The food is phenomenal. And I want to say Merle Shepherd, former president of Safari Club International, has donated a Fred Bear print signed by Fred and the last thing literally that Fred signed. I mean, it's incredible.
You know, Merle's a good friend of ours, and so I was talking to him, and he says, you know, I have this print, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. He says, well, why don't we just donate that? And it literally was the last print that Fred Bear signed before he passed away, and Merle happened to have a couple of these, and so we got one to auction off on Saturday at the live auction, which is definitely a one-of-a-kind item. You know, being Fred, being the legend that he is. So
sure.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, we had a long conversation, a little bit of a conversation about Fred in the previous segment with Greg Woodland about sportsman's collectibles and things of that nature. And I probably should have mentioned to Greg about this one, but which I'll be calling him after we're done here, Doug, to get him up there. But yeah, by all means, this is open to the public and see for yourself how important this group is, not only to you know, us in the outdoors, but to whitetail in general. And it really is truly great to see that this kind of work going in when you don't technically have to, but you do.
Right. Yeah, it's just, it's a passion. It's a love. I mean, everybody loves, you know, we talked about this, everybody from 1 year old to 99 love whitetail deer.
Oh yeah.
And whether you're a hunter or not, or whether you agree with the farming or not, the one thing we all do agree on is we love the white-tailed deer, and we always try to do the very best that we can for it, whether you're a hunter, whether you're a deer farmer, wherever you fit in, that is the most passionate animal that people are about, and that's what makes it great.
No, honestly, Doug, I am probably one of many that enjoy interacting and watching them more than I ever do hunting them, It's just because of how they are, you know, and that's what turkey, I could shoot them all day long. They're great. I love them. Whitetail, a whole other story. I love hunting them. Don't get me wrong, but just to watch their movements and how they interact as a group and as individuals,
yep,
is such a learning experience. And you do it every day. I'm envious to a degree.
Yeah. I still many days wake up and pinch myself. I have to be honest and go, wow, I've been able to figure out how to make a living farming, you know, white-tailed deer. I used to do the elk, and they were fun, but the whitetail just has a spot in my heart. And my entire family has been a part of that. So it's been a lot of fun. But hey, something you might be interested in, I don't know,
yes,
if I mentioned the mystery gun safe. We have a mystery gun safe. There's 100 tickets being sold. They're $100 a piece, but the mystery gun safe, I can't tell you what's in it because that's the mystery, but it's valued at over $6,000.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a 30-gun gun safe, so you'll win the gun safe, brand-new gun safe. I can tell you that there will be a minimum of 5 guns in the safe.
Wow.
Plus other prizes that brings the entire total value to just over $6,000. That will be auctioned off as well. And then the big one, Duran, is our golden tickets. We sell golden tickets. You can win golden tickets in different games and prizes. But at the end of the auction, Saturday afternoon, evening, about 5:30, we will pick 10 of those golden tickets. They'll go up. Those people will go up on stage. There's 10 chairs.
Oh.
And we start drawing the numbers out, and the last person left, everyone wins something, whether it's money or a gun or something. Those 10 people will guarantee to win something. When we get to 4, we raffle another chair off, but the winner, the number one person, the last person standing, $10,000 cash.
Wow. There it is. No excuses, folks. March 4th, 5th, Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort, the United Deer Farmers of Michigan Convention. And I will be there along with Doug Roberts and everybody else. We hope to see you there. Thanks, Doug, so much. We appreciate it. Thanks to Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, and United Deer Farmers of Michigan. Hold another hour coming up. David A. Rose, and we'll talk Hunt to Heel as well on the Michigan Talk Network.